Greetings. Welcome to Media Matters Today. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, coming to you on September 11th, 2005, from Campbell Hall on the campus of the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, here on WILL AM 580. It's a lovely, gorgeous Sunday afternoon. Today we're going to be privileged to have as our guest one of the leading broadcast journalists of our times, David Brancaccio, the host of the Now program on PBS television, seen here locally and seen nationally. Brancaccio also has just returned from Baton Rouge, where he's been covering the effects of Hurricane Katrina, and he'll be able to give us an update and analysis of the situation there. So we've got a terrific show waiting for you today on Media Matters, but first, let's go to Media Minutes.
Welcome to Media Minutes, a weekly review of news relating to the intersection of media and democracy. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Kimberly Cronick.
It will be some time before the full scope of damage done to the Gulf Coast communications infrastructure from Hurricane Katrina will be known, but the initial reports are grim. Bell South, the dominant phone company in the region, reports more than 1 million lines are down. Workers are on two-week shift rotations, 13 days on, 1 day off, and thousands who lost their homes are living in company-constructed tent cities. Cell phone service is hit and miss throughout the region as well. It's easier to call in than out, what with traffic capacity reduced by more than 75%. Most radio and TV stations are off the air, and those still on are simulcasting each other. Cable systems, for the most part, haven't even begun to assess the damage. The biggest problem for all of these services is power. Generators are in tight supply, and the fuel to run them even tighter. Outside the flood zones, efforts are now turning toward ways to knit those displaced back together. Tens of thousands of people have been evacuated from New Orleans and other communities to several places, one of which is Houston, Texas, where people have been mass housed at the Astrodome and Reliant Center. Media activists are working hard to build ad hoc wireless computer networks in these particular shelters to facilitate the sharing of emergency information and reunion of family and friends. The Federal Communications Commission also approved the construction of three low-power FM radio stations to broadcast inside the venues. Tish Stringer is a volunteer with the Houston Independent Media Center. She says the lack of communication is a real hardship on the displaced and those trying to help them.
People had no information about the location of their loved ones. There was a real difficulty getting information for basic things like when to eat, where to eat, how to get my child into school, how to look for jobs, transportation, really basic issues. There was no circulation of information going on.
Even though the transmitting equipment is ready to go, local officials will not let the stations begin broadcasting. Stringer says their first excuse was a lack of radios for the displaced to listen to.
Before I can let you on the air, I need to know that you're going to distribute radios, a very specific kind of radio that she laid out what kind it would be. She said, I need you to have 10,000 radios in your hand before you can go on the air. In 1 day, we got 10,000 radios. We have 10,000 radios right now, ready to distribute in the Astrodome.
Then, a self-appointed incident commander on the scene barred radio volunteers from the Astrodome, claiming the facility couldn't spare the electricity to run the station. A preposterous claim, since the transmitters draw less power than an average incandescent light bulb. Now, Houston officials say they plan to empty their shelters by the end of the month, which leaves the status of the entire radio project unclear.
Meanwhile, the media coverage of Katrina's aftermath is moving from breaking news mode to critiques of the lack of rescue plans and resources. 3 years ago, the main newspaper in New Orleans published a five-part series about the dangers of flooding from a hurricane's direct hit and the inadequacy of the city's levee system. Subsequent stories reported how federal money to improve the levee system was diverted to pay for the occupation of Iraq and other projects involved in the so-called War on Terror. Very little of this coverage mentions the race and class angle to the devastation, namely that those hardest hit are overwhelmingly poor and African American, which may explain why official rescue efforts have been so feeble. A review of transcripts from CNN, MSNBC, and Fox News during the first full week of hurricane coverage by the American Progress Action Fund found that less than 2% of the 1,300 stories aired on the hurricane even mentioned race or class. As for journalists themselves, many are afraid the National Guard has plans to seal off the worst affected areas, including the entire city of New Orleans. The Federal Emergency Management Agency is already denying access to journalists looking to cover ongoing search and rescue efforts. A FEMA spokesperson says their main goal is to prevent the photographing of dead bodies.
And now, here's a Media Minutes Fast Fact. Is there a connection between broadcast indecency and media consolidation? A new study from the Center for Creative Voices in Media and Free Press suggests the answer is yes. Analyzing FCC indecency cases from 2000 to 2003, the study found 82% of the radio programs fined were owned by mega broadcasters like Viacom and Clear Channel, and 96% of all fines issued during the period targeted four of the nation's largest radio groups. The report recommends the FCC promote diversity of ownership and localism as tools to combat indecency, as opposed to going off half-cocked on some sort of cleanup of the airwaves that might trample the First Amendment. You've been listening to Media Minutes, a joint production of the Illinois Initiative for Media Policy Research at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign and Free Press, a national nonpartisan organization dedicated to media democracy. For more information, visit our website at freepress.net.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host and the participants.
Greetings. Welcome back to Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. I'm DONW ILL AM 580 this beautiful Sunday, September 11th, 2005, here in beautiful Urbana, Illinois. And it's a pleasure to be here. Today, our guest is David Brancaccio, the host of PBS's Now, probably one of the best-known broadcast journalists in the United States today. A broadcaster for 28 years, Brancaccio spent his last 13 years, at Marketplace, first as European editor of the program and later as host. He's contributed to numerous prominent print publications and broadcast networks. It is a great honor to welcome David Brancaccio to our program today. David?
How are you doing, Professor?
Well, thank you so much for joining us. I know you've been busy, and we want to talk a lot today about Now and about journalism and PBS and all those issues. But I think the issue that's been most on your mind and the mind on most Americans and certainly most of our listeners for the last 2 weeks has been Hurricane Katrina and the aftermath. And you've just returned, as I recall, from Baton Rouge, and you've been covering this story.
Yes, I get to go back at about 5 o'clock tomorrow morning for another for much of next week. We're going to be down there. We're producing a town hall meeting that's going to air next Friday night, trying to get a lot of people who've been evacuated, stakeholders, politicians together to try to start a conversation about, I hope the conversation will be about what are the values that people want to bring to the process of responding to this. Left to their own devices, people rebuilding New Orleans will go off and carry out their own agenda. Well, whose agenda should it be? And so we're going to have a conversation about that. I hope it'll be a productive one.
And that will, we have an expanded time slot, I hope, for the show if you're doing a town meeting?
Yeah, it's going to go an hour. And we're shooting it Tuesday night, and then we're going to get it ready for air, and it'll be on Friday evening in most places.
As it will here in Champaign on WILL, where we proudly carry the show. When did you get down? You've been in Baton Rouge last week, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I was down there. I didn't get to New Orleans. My colleague, Maria Hinojosa, who's our senior correspondent now, got to a very important place. She and Brian Myers, her producer, and a crew were down in some very hard-hit parts of Mississippi that have not seen much media coverage. A lot of poor people, black and white, really suffering there, feeling like disposable people, I think, in the words of some of the people I've talked to in that piece last Friday night. If you didn't have the cash flow to fill up your car tank, there's no evacuation plan. This very charismatic mother spoke with us, talking about the difficulties of just moving forward. She has this autistic son, who we met very briefly in the piece, and they just have to wait around. They haven't seen any official government presence, federal, state, or local, and they found it, I think, the one word was they found it disappointing. I think they also found it exasperating and heartbreaking.
There's the great economist, Sen, who has the famous line that no country that is a democracy has ever had a famine, that no matter what the drought situations, a democratic government will always know that it's imperative that it respond to make sure there not be needless death through a natural disaster. And I couldn't help but think of those comments for the past 2 weeks, almost on a daily basis, as I saw what was happening in the Gulf. In your reporting, again, what we're hearing almost everywhere, which is the relief efforts have been, if not non-existent, extraordinarily tardy.
Extraordinarily tardy. And, you know, as we bring our discussion around to matters of the media here, I had to shake my head when there was a lot of just truly horrible moments, right? Last 2 weeks beyond description, I think, for many people, loss of life. But one of my favorite moments was last Friday when word came that the head of FEMA, Mr. Brown, was being reposted to Washington, taken off the Katrina case. And he let it be known that the media was to blame. That's the problem here, was the media. And I thought, at first, how preposterous. And then I thought about it a little further, Robert, and I thought, he's right. The media was to blame. But that's probably a good thing. In other words, without intense coverage of these perceived failures by an aggressive media, then things just kind of tick along, and people who have responsibility, who may be falling down on their with their responsibilities to protect people, won't get the heat. So I thought, you know what we need is I shouldn't chafe when I hear yet again the media is to blame. I should actually celebrate it when the media does have a role in bringing people's attention to a job not well done.
Our guest today on Media Matters, you're listening to David Brancaccio, the host of PBS's Now, which airs locally on WILL television every Friday at 7:30. And this week it will be an expanded one-hour town meeting from the Gulf area, 7:30 to 8:30, to discuss what all this means and where to go and what values should be emphasized. Is what we've learned from the Hurricane Katrina, again, here on WILL-TV. If you'd like to call in with a question or comment for David Brancaccio, not only about Katrina and this story, which he is covering, but also about PBS, about Now, about journalism, about the program and the work that Brancaccio has been doing, please call us, the local number 333-9455, our toll-free number 1-800-222-9455. Now, David, what's been your sense? I mean, you've been talking about the press coverage. What has been your sense of the media coverage of Katrina over the past 2 weeks? From what you, I know you're, you know, a voracious reader of media.
Yeah, it was fascinating to watch some of these anchor folk on other networks wake up from their long slumber when officials said something that was clearly wrong, misinformed, or perhaps a lie. Uncharacteristically, you saw people, journalists, say something about that instead of the typical impulse in recent years, which is if someone says something demonstrably false, you go on the air and say, well, that official said this, and you let the falsehood or misrepresentation just kind of hang in the air without great question. I think when confronted with this natural disaster and then a not so natural disaster in a response that seems inadequate, you finally had reporters getting out there and emphasizing when official statements did not line up with reality. And it's not a radical point of view. I don't think it's Democrat or Republican point of view. It's what the media, you'd hope, would do more often, is to fact-check some of this stuff. And so in the last, not quite fortnight now, since the full force of that storm and then the resulting flooding hit, you got a taste of what an aggressive news media can do. I doubt you are too, Robert. I'm not fully heartened that this is going to be the great trend going forward. They woke up and stayed awake, but I think it's useful. I have seen some conservative commentators lashing back. You know, there is a backlash, I guess is the best way to phrase that, and saying that to criticism of the president without laying blame on local and state officials for their failings is just partisan. Yet again, the liberal news media at work. Look, I think there's plenty of blame to go around. But, you know, I mean, Anderson Cooper, go figure, on CNN.
Yeah,
he was on one of the talk shows the other night and did something that you just have not seen a mainstream American journalist do in a while. He says, I think in response to the administration's statement that this is not the time for the blame game, he said, you may have seen this, he says, look, I got my calendar right here. If now's not the time for the blame game, what is the right time? Can we pick a date? And, you know, that's an important you know, that prompts a good discussion among anybody watching that to say, you know, is this a society where we do hold people accountable if extra deaths result from incompetence, if that's the case? And this is all important stuff. It's not just, you know, Anderson Cooper or anybody else grandstanding or fooling around. It's the most important conversation we're supposed to be having right now. Once we get people who remain in harm's way out of harm's way and into some kind of shelter and some kind of plan for the future.
You know, I think what Cooper was responding to and what the journalists were, from my sense of it, is that the administration was caught so flat-footed. I mean, flat-footed does injustice to the body part that's involved, I think, by Katrina and the aftermath. I mean, literally days and days and days in which broadcast journalists and print journalists are down there covering it and there's still no federal presence to speak of. That there was really no public relations spin available that was at all remotely plausible, sort of leaving this massive opening for journalists to then proceed in and do their work without the usual blarney they have to wade through.
Yeah, without that intermediate filter. People could be at the New Orleans Convention Center or at the Superdome and see with their own eyes and report it into satellites for those of us to watch or listen to. And when it didn't line up with official statements, finally, some of it was underscored. But you know, it's interesting. You'll soon see more of this. It's already started to happen. I've seen some on the web and some of the conservative media outlets. The sense that that criticism of the administration is partisan. I really don't think it is. Is it a Democrat or Republican question to ask of the quadrillions we've been spending on Homeland Security to make your family safe and my family safe? It's my money, right? Pay taxes. Are we more vulnerable to something going wrong now? I mean, that's not a partisan question, and it's one of the most important questions that any citizen could ask, and I think any journalist could ask at this stage. And I don't know for sure, but I have a hunch that moving forward, we still have a few more days of being able to ask this question before the partisan label falls on our heads and some journalists stop asking the question for fear of looking like they are partisan in some way.
My name is Bob McChesney. You're listening to Media Matters today on WILL AM 580 here in beautiful Urbana, Illinois, on Sunday, September 11th, 2005. Our guest today, the voice you've been listening to, is that of David Brancaccio, the host of the Now program on PBS television, aired nationally and locally on WILL TV, 7:30 p.m. on Friday. And this Friday, there will be a special one-hour version of Now that Brancaccio will be hosting, which will be a town meeting from people in the Gulf State areas. You'll be in Baton Rouge, I assume, for the town meeting. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, to put a town meeting together, you need a little bit of infrastructure, and, you know, they get power, and they've got a wonderful public television station there that has been doing incredible work. They have all these crews from all over the place, like NewsHour on top of them. Mm-hmm. They have the one transmitter, I'm told, that's still on the air over New Orleans is a commercial station, but they don't have studio and news gathering facilities, so they've transferred them to the public television station in Baton Rouge, which turned over its studios for this. So you walk into the public television station in Baton Rouge, and they've got the commercial newscast on the air, which they're also putting on to the public airwaves as well. They've got the likes of me and my crew setting up for bringing in every possible citizen evacuee and dignitary we can find, and they're all dealing with it at the Baton Rouge public station with great charm and aplomb. Now, it's a sad situation. We're talking about media here. The public television station from New Orleans, that's a separate station, they had just come in when I arrived in Baton Rouge. They're carrying a little bit of the equipment that they could salvage. They weren't technically flooded by rising floodwaters. Their studio's on slightly higher ground. The storm itself blew off the roof. And even just a couple of days later, the public television station in New Orleans had this fuzz of white mold over all the equipment. And, you know, it's going to be a real difficult challenge getting the infrastructure put together down there just to tell the stories and tell people what they need to, get their communities back on some kind of trajectory toward normalcy. It's a very hard situation. So anyway, we're going to Baton Rouge, where at least you can go down to 7-Eleven, get a quart of milk if you need to.
If you'd like to call in and have a question for David Brancaccio, the number here at Media Matters is 333-9455, our toll-free number 1-800-222-9455. Let's go to the phone lines right now. Line 1, Monticello, you're on the air with David Brancaccio.
Hi, David. My name is Maureen, and I just have to say that I stay home to watch your show because I think it's superb, as I stay home to listen to Bob McChesney on Sunday. So.
Oh, well, you should stay home for Bob. Sunday's a nice time for reflection. On Friday night when we're on, I think I need to send you like a gift certificate for a restaurant so you can get out more. I am so honored that you would say that.
Well, it's a superb show, and so I have two questions.
Mm-hmm.
One is, do you think that the conservatives are going to succeed in shutting down public radio and TV? And the other question is, do you think, I just realized, found out today, that Hillary Clinton is proposing an independent commission. Do you think that we're going to be successful in getting an independent commission so that Bush isn't able to cast the blame on other people? And, well, and I'll hang up and let you.
No, thank you very much, Colin.
Oh, thanks so much for those questions. I mean, on the second part about an independent review of what has transpired over the past fortnight in the Gulf, I think it's an important rule for any citizen to follow is you have to know that the construction of one of those reviews, the ground rules, the rules for the road on any review, are probably the most important thing because whitewashers are very easy and it's easy to rig one of these committees. And that's still evolving. You had threats late last week of Democrats boycotting any kind of congressional attempt to review the emergency response that didn't give a strong voice to Democrats as well as Republicans. And it wouldn't surprise me if we get an independent commission, but what is truly independent? And who is the chairman of that? And what kind of powers do they have? That's going to be a very important subject for all of us to cover. And you know, you bet that now's going to be watching this because we did this with the September 11th commission. We spent a decent amount of time talking about the sort of plumbing that lay beneath the construction of these kind of inquiries, as the British call them. So,
David, if I can I be the devil's advocate for a second here on this point of the independent commission and the comparison to 9/11. In the case of the 9/11 commission, it was, you know, for most of us, was clearly a surprise attack. And who did it, why they did it, how they did it, not immediately self-evident, isn't even always evident right now. And certainly the need for detailed study and debate and examination and inquiry was clearly necessary. In this case, I mean, not that we don't need a detailed examination to find out what went wrong. At the same time, I mean, all the immediate evidence we're getting, for example, the New York Times front page story this morning, you know, there's some stuff's pretty clear already. I mean, the people who are down there, that's what didn't happen. You know what I mean? I mean, do we really, I mean, is a commission in a way also a way to sort of push something off so far that when, you know, you really, the iron is hot, you aren't striking?
It could be a way to delay it and then to say, we'll get the final result of this commission in the year 2057.
Yeah, we can't make any assessment of what FEMA did until this thing has been reviewed by 39 generations of bureaucrats.
Well, I mean, you do see that rhetorical gambit being used right now. Now's not the time for review. Yes, it is, because it's the freshest in people's minds, and you don't want evidence destroyed. And what's the goal here? I don't think it's a political goal. The goal of a review is pretty straightforward, which is this cannot happen again. In my preparations for the town meeting, a whole series of have a whole heading of areas that I want to get the reaction of people, and it's under the topic simply never again. And so we do really do. I think we do need to identify exactly where it failed. I mean, if it's as reporting like in the New York Times has been suggesting, this lack of preparation for if state and local officials, if their command centers are incapacitated. I mean, I'm no expert, right, Robert? I mean, you know I'm no expert in emergency preparedness. I do something else for a living. But, duh, I think it's the simple monosyllabic utterance here. They didn't think about that? Well, that's got to change. And so there does need to be some organized process to give citizens some hope that the hundreds of billions being spent for Homeland Security is going to be worth something.
I don't know. I think it might even be more profound or more striking than that, Dave, in the sense that more than just never again. I mean, I think why in the first place? I mean, in terms of people accountable for what happened this past 2 weeks, rather than slapping on the wrist saying, now next time actually doesn't happen, or we're going to take away your big screen television. You know, that seems like that the approach has got to be who's responsible for what just happened. They've got to pay a price. And then for anyone in their positions, again, in the future, won't take those chances.
Yeah, you know, if we lived in Japan, where high officials, when they screw up, take immediate action, you know what I'm talking about?
No, well, I mean, I think the point I led with the Sen comment about, you know, famines and democracies, friends of mine from Europe say that any government, whatever its party, that allowed this much damage, this many people to die in a hurricane, which is something that happens frequently in this country, that would just simply be, that's grounds for dissolving a government. I mean, that's simply, you know, that's sort of like exhibit A, that you're not competent. You've lost your right to rule.
Yeah, I mean, there's that grim point where the administration at senior levels made it clear that they didn't think the levees were going to break. And there's a FEMA document from a couple of years ago that, if I have this right, you know, listed bad things that could happen that they're worried about. Number three was terrorist attack. Number two, I think, was big earthquake out in California way. And numero uno on the things to worry about was disastrous hurricane and flood in New Orleans.
Yeah.
And the notion that we had to do one of these Apollo 13, seat of your pants, let's see if American ingenuity can come to bear on dealing with this disaster, is disappointing, he said, choosing a non-emotive word.
But it just strikes me that the whole framework for understanding this crisis, I don't understand why we aren't really in a full accountability mode for what has happened, not just for so it won't happen again, since I think right now there's no reason to believe that much of the death and destruction that's taking place couldn't have been avoided if we had done any sort of serious organization to prepare for it. Well, we're talking to David Brancaccio today on Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. Brancaccio is the host of PBS's Now, the wonderful weekly television news program airing Fridays on most stations, including locally in WILL-TV. This Friday, Now will be holding a one-hour town meeting from Baton Rouge to be discussing what goes forward out of the aftermath of the Katrina hurricane. If you'd like to call in, the number here, 333-9455, toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. Let's go back to the phone lines right now. Line 4, Lawrence, Kansas. Welcome to Illinois. You're on the air with David Brancaccio.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to say that although it did look like the media, and mostly I was just watching CNN, finally seemed to be more appropriate in this incident, you know, with the hurricane, I just yesterday saw a disappointing shift to what looked to me like they were blaming the victims for their failure to respond. The piece was suggesting that civil unrest, you know, that ensued was unexpected, so they couldn't have possibly planned for that, and therefore they were justified in, you know, the problems they had. But of course, it seems to me that the civil unrest grew out of people's basic needs not being met in the first place. You know, they were hungry, they were thirsty, they had no clue, there was no one down there with a megaphone telling them what's going to happen and where things are. So that's my comment.
Well, thank you very much. And, you know, David Brancaccio, this, I think, leads into one of the themes that has emerged forcefully in this discussion, which is inequality in our society, racism, the decline of the public sector. I mean, crucial long-term problems of this country have come right to the surface, and I think this question gets at that.
And it shocks me that people are surprised to see, you know, to turn on the televisions and they're surprised that there are these vast inequalities in America. I mean, some of us have been trying to report on some of this. You know, Robert, I actually thought of you a couple times this week. We're trying to figure out how we were going to cover this. And when you and I last talked about a month ago, you're talking about public television finding a voice for itself. Public television's got a lot of problems, and we'll probably talk about a couple of those.
In fact, we should have, since someone did ask about that earlier, and we didn't get to that question, but we can get back to that in a second.
Yeah, it's true. I'm sure. I'm sorry.
That's no, right. That was my fault, too.
It was the first part of her question.
That's Maureen, right.
I think her name was. But and you said to me, one of the important areas that public television can excel, and where there's, of course, a giant, vast opening for us, is to be a vehicle for people who don't have a voice in society, who are often ignored, and who often our democracy, as it's currently constructed, doesn't do well by. to have a voice. And so, you know, it sounds all highfalutin when the professor says it. But we're like, well, how do we translate this? And we you know, reached into the core of what we do on the show, and we said, well, what we need to do is, you've seen some print accounts of some of the people who are so poor they couldn't move, that they don't have, that storm came at the end of the month, so checks had not arrived from government assistance. They were in the mail, essentially. People had no cash flow, and so they can't get out of the way because there was no mechanism set up for them. And so we let their stories play out. We went long to sort of get a well-rounded sense of who they are, their humanity, where they're coming from, and the horrible obstacles they're facing, to give them that voice as best we could. And then, of course, Robert, what happens is, I go to church this morning, and the minister had a lot to say about 9/11. This is the anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm talking to you from New Jersey, where we actually had members of the local community here, quite a few, who perished in that. She's also talking a lot about Katrina relief. But then she said something that was difficult for me to hear, which is the stories of the people in the hurricane zone who reporters are objectifying on the air. And, you know, you don't want to do that either. The notion of making them, you know, making them symbols of something and then losing the sense of their humanity in the coverage, you know, using them to fill time or mm-hmm. fill column inches. You got to watch that. But I think, informed by what you had mentioned to me about places where we need to stay strong with our coverage, is give voices to these people. Put the cameras in front of them. Let them talk. What are they going through? What are their frustrations? And I think we did that, and we're going to continue to do that.
All right. David Brancaccio, our guest today on Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, here in WILL AM 580. We are coming to you live, so please call in if you wish at 333-945, our toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. We have a few callers waiting patiently, but David, before we go back to the callers, let's go to that earlier question, which was your concern about the campaign that some self-described on the political right have against the continued funding, or even the continued existence, but certainly the continued public funding of public broadcasting, both in radio and television in the United States.
Yeah, I mean, some folks may not know this, but it turned out that the head of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which is in theory should be the body that keeps public broadcasting independent from meddling politicians.
The heat shield,
supposedly, had ordered up a content analysis. They had hired somebody to watch now and write down our political leanings and the political leanings of the guests. And, you know, A, if you just asked me, I could have given you all that stuff, transcripts, because we don't hide what we do. We stick them into transmitters around the country.
And it's all up on the web, if anyone's
interested.
It's
all on the web. You know, it's not like we're doing it in secret. And it came up with, a pretty wacky little content analysis that had hardcore Republicans labeled as liberals. Bob Barr from Georgia, former congressman, one of the managers of the impeachment effort against Clinton, not exactly a Ted Kennedy liberal. And he shows up as anti-administration because he has questions about the Patriot Act and stuff like that. It was crazy. And, you know, it was probably a bid to pressure us somehow, maybe more my predecessor on the program, Bill Moyers. But the idea is, I think, you know, we're watching you guys, and we don't like the fact that there are so many people on the air who are raising important questions about how we're being governed. And I always thought that's what we're supposed to do, regardless of whether it's a Democrat or Republican in power. It's not about the party or leanings of those in power. It's just that if you're doing some muckraking journalism, doing important stories, you're going to be raising questions about where there are perceived problems. And it makes people in power very uncomfortable. And in an era where a lot of journalism is being done by private news organizations that are part of bigger media companies that have other business with government, like there might be another part of your broadcasting company that wants some deregulation in some area, you have the prospect of other media trying to suck up to those in power so that they can get what they want when it comes to regulation. Public broadcasting, you know, we should call it as we see it, and it appears some people don't like it. We're continuing to do what we have to do. It isn't easy in the sense of it costs money to do what we do. And, you know, I had to pay for a way too expensive ticket last week to get my crew down there because it's, you know, everybody's trying to get those plane flights. And this stuff is expensive. And we don't find it that easy to get some of the corporate underwriting that we had hoped to get. We have some generous family foundations. We have PBS money, which is money from the stations. The stations that broadcast us, and they get it from all sorts of places like you, the viewer. But this is a very difficult time to keep doing what we have to do just because it's so expensive. But, yeah, you know, the other part of me, when I'm not sort of vaguely annoyed that the push wouldn't be to bring to nurture more coverage on public broadcasting about crucial issues rather than less, I'm sort of flattered at the attention. You know, sometimes you do these stories and you think you can change the world and absolutely zero happens. I was interested that someone with connections to the White House was at least tuning in.
David Brancaccio, our guest today in Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. We're going to go back to the phone lines in a second. I should point out for our listeners who might not have followed this story very closely, the effort to slash funding for NPR and PBS in the budget a few months ago failed due to an extraordinary, massive outpouring of support for public broadcasting across the country. And also, I should also point out to corroborate what David Brancaccio just said, his predecessor at Now, Bill Moyers, who was, I think, singled out for attack by some in the Republican Party as being a partisan journalist. His work when Bill Clinton was president was anything but party line journalism. In fact, I don't think the Clinton administration saw Bill Moyers as anything as a sympathetic journalist at all. He did some of the most critical work of his career about the Clinton administration and the Democrats when they were in power. Let's go back to the phone lines now. Line one, Pasotum, Illinois. You're on the air with David Brancaccio of Now.
Hello. Love your program. You always have excellent guests. I guess I've got three comments. One thing, it always makes me sad. I'm like 50 years old now, and I hear the old protest songs of the 70s, and nothing has changed. Particularly, they had Golden Country by REO the other day, and they were playing it on one of the on Webb station about, I think he picked it up from Air America, about how the injustice of the United States. But my main point, I guess I only have two, is on Ira Glass on This American Life had some poignant interviews yesterday. I don't know if you're familiar with that or not. And I don't want to disparage any of the relief workers down there, but it seems to me if there's truth, which I don't doubt those interviews to the, what they did to some of those people, that there should not be some criminal proceedings. And I hope in your town meeting you can uncover some of these things. Thank you very much. I'll hang up and listen if you have any comment.
All right. Thank you very much, Colin.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of This American Life by Ira Glass. Sometimes it's about that program. It celebrates narrative. It celebrates people's stories. And I think that's important because that's how people retain information, when you hear them in the form of stories. And he's been doing some great, great work. Yeah, there's a lot of hardworking people trying to help out. But just in Baton Rouge, for instance, normally there's a population of 227,000 people. There's now an estimated 100,000 more people, all these evacuees from the area. And that's going to ultimately get a little tense. Imagine if your household swelled by that amount. But they're doing wonderful work to help people. That said, some bad things happened. There was an account that we're going to be keeping an eye on that was in the New York Times yesterday, in which groups of people have been told, I think by New Orleans authorities, to head for this bridge, there were buses waiting. Are there really buses waiting? Yes, they were told, according to their account. There are buses waiting. So they go there toward this bridge, and these people trying to escape the floodwaters are blocked by suburban policemen who fire in the air over their heads and say, you're not coming into our suburb, essentially. And they have to turn back. And it's just, there's just things that went very badly wrong that aren't just random acts of a system that occasionally will have a failure, that do unfortunately reflect on pre-existing problems about attitudes toward people from New Orleans, from the suburbs, for instance, that reflective people are going to have to engage, and hopefully the news media will be a part of it.
David Brancaccio, our guest today in Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. We have a few callers that are patiently waiting. I'll get to them in a second. In the past 2 weeks, David Brancaccio, we have been on the air, on the internet, at every turn, implored to make donations and contributions to help the suffering people of the Gulf region, specifically Mississippi and Louisiana, as the catastrophe of Katrina continues to ravage the area. And I don't know the exact figure yet, but I'm sure tens, hundreds of millions of dollars, if not more, will ultimately be raised as a result of this and this donations and
philanthropy. It was hundreds of millions as of the middle of last week,
yeah,
so it's really racking up.
There's a side of me, though, and that says, wait a second. You know, isn't this what government's supposed to do? Isn't this like job one, that you're supposed to pay taxes and prepare for stuff like this? And I mean, I'm all for philanthropy and helping our neighbor and everything, but one of the reasons human societies have governments is to take care of this sort of stuff. Shouldn't part of this be like, hey, government, what's going on here? Why don't you have the resources to do job one? You know what I mean? There's a political story.
Well, especially since we've spent so much money in just this area the past couple years. It's a legitimate question. You know, what's interesting is that there's a dialogue going on that I've been keeping my ear to, particularly in the African-American community. I've picked up some very specific pieces of this, even here in the New York area, which is, in as much as government was seen to fail, even if we would have preferred, you know, obviously everybody would have preferred that it not fail, but also if we think it's more efficient to let government take care of these things, if it's seen to fail, then individuals have to rise up and fill in the blank. And so you're seeing in the African-American community, through churches and other organizations, this effort to backstop a system, a government system that failed, to sort of fill in the blank. It doesn't always start with the sense that it should be a rescue response that starts with the individual. It's just that we've been forced into this position, really.
You know, I always think of that bumper sticker that's been around for, gosh, at least two decades, where it says, you know, wouldn't it be great if schools had all the money they needed and the Pentagon had to hold a bake sale? And it just, you know, here we are, the most important thing government's supposed to be doing, and we have to sort of beg for money from people. You know, it just strikes me that there's a broader political debate here. It's a purely a political question, sort of glossed over with the assumption, yeah, this is how we've got to do it. When, in fact, you know, in a lot of other countries of the world, you wouldn't have to beg for money. There'd be money there instantly if the problem would even exist.
Yeah, and you can find them if you scrape far enough. But you have to work very hard to find even libertarians who don't believe that disaster control and disaster mitigation and disaster response is not a good role for government. But what it does is it bleeds over into a fascinating discussion moving forward about, okay, there's a government in power now that believes in smaller government, that there should be a minimal role for government. In fact, the governor of
rhetorically.
Yes.
I mean, because the government's larger than it's ever been in terms of raw size.
Yeah, take a look at the deficit if you don't believe it. You know, that rhetoric is a little hard to articulate this week, even though the governor of Mississippi used to be head of the Republican Party and is very well versed in making that argument about smaller government. It needs to be big enough to take care of this and take care of us when there are these kinds of threats. And how this disaster shapes that basic political debate is a really important one moving forward.
Okay, we're talking to David Brancaccio today on Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. We have a few callers who've been waiting very patiently. Line 2, Champagne, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon. A fan of both of yours, by the way. Thank you for all you do.
Well, thanks for saying that. Tell me your name.
My name is Iris.
Hi, Iris.
Hi. I have a larger question, which is about everything you've been talking about. I graduated from the U of I in 1958 and with a journalism degree, and we were required, regardless of our specialty, to do a lot of, you know, studying in the work of news and so forth. And, you know, it used to be that the press was looked at as a fourth estate, not connected to the government, didn't want to get cozy with the government, and their role was to be the skeptic. It was to be the critic, to always imagine that what they were told wasn't exactly the whole story and to dig deeper. And somehow we have, over the last decades, gotten to the point where the press is so afraid to do anything. They're so afraid to say anything. They won't be asked back to be in the White House Correspondents Group, or they won't, whatever. The press should get unified and say, not on our turf anymore, and I wonder what the kids in school are being taught about this now.
Well, Iris, I know that Robert has thought a lot about just this issue. I'm interested to hear what he says, too. But the I'd love to point fingers in all directions, but I got to point it myself as a journalist. Part of the problem here with is how journalists themselves have ruined it for themselves. There was a time when the public perceived, I think, perceived reporters as, to some extent, acting in the public interest. And in as much as some of these buffoon correspondents on television are seen as acting in their own interest or the interest of their own career or the interest of their employer, then people say, nah, I mean, I'm not that interested in him, in that man or that woman asking tough questions on my behalf. He doesn't represent me. We've lost, in many cases, the trust of our viewers and listeners and readers because we're not seen to be operating in the public interest. And it's a real shame because, you know, we do have often the microphones and the cameras in real time and the ability to hold people's feet to the fire in real time. And a lot of the public just thinks we're a bunch of, if I can say this on public radio, jackasses.
And, we'll let you get away with it this time.
I have to be very, very careful because, as you know, in addition to everything else, they're on top of us about never saying any caca words on the air, and something that I, of course, agree with. But you know, if you get a job at the BBC in England, if you're a youngish person who wants a career path, your in-laws are going to respect you. That's a kind of cool job over there. In this country, you say you're going to be a reporter. It's like saying you're going to be a lawyer. It's you know, it's not all that high status anymore. Why? Because we're not seen as trying to do good work and make the world a better place, ultimately. We're seen as trying to make our employers money. And I know I'm not, because I'm public broadcasting. We're not making anybody any money. We're spending it. But by and large, with journalism, that's part of the problem.
It's funny, going back to your question about the Fourth Estate, it's interesting because as soon as the aftermath of Katrina happened, I know that my response was, well, gee, I wonder what the government position is, you know, the Bush administration's going to say about this. What's their defense of this, of the their conduct so far? So I said, I better turn to Fox to find out, because I knew that whatever the sort of White House position would be, that sort of this quasi-official sort of party channel. You know, quite not the Fourth Estate whatsoever, but it's not simply Fox. It's, I think, as you pointed out, there are deep problems that go well beyond the explicit partisanship. I mean, just was it last week? And I'm not as my listeners may well know, I'm not the world's most knowledgeable rap music follower, but the hip hop singer was on a fundraiser on NBC and made some disparaging comment about how Bush didn't care about African American people. And it was, you know, blipped from the show for the West Coast version. It said it's entirely inappropriate.
But, you know, that comment had legs in a sense. Laura Bush felt moved to address it head on late in the week, saying, mm-hmm. I just paraphrased what she said. I forgot her exact comments. But, you know, if anybody knows the president, it's her, and that he would never regard African Americans with that, you know, yeah, that kind of attitude.
But the interesting point, David, I want to say is, I like your comment, is had that rap singer stood up and said at that fundraiser, I know we have a president who really cares about poor people and African American people, it wouldn't have been censored. They wouldn't have said, gee, that's over the top pro-president, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, no, under no circumstances would that have been censored. You know, my old radio program, God bless them, Marketplace, you know, mm-hmm, on public
sure.
radio, they had a little scoop this week. Apparently they were talking to the former First Lady, Barbara Bush, the president's mom.
Yeah, she's had a good week.
Yeah, she had quite a good week. And the quote from her that caused some consternation, which, again, I paraphrase, it was something to the effect of the impoverished people of New Orleans were better off fleeing their difficult conditions.
Yeah, sort of the, Katrina had done them a favor.
Yeah, some read that comment that way, and that did get circulated around a lot, didn't get bleeped from public broadcasting. But I watched Fox, and I was interested to see. I mean, you saw some of the anchors and reporters were extremely critical of the government response.
Well, it seemed like there was at times a real discrepancy between what was going on in the studio and then there were reporters who were on the ground saying, well, listen, that just isn't really going to explain what's going on here.
Yeah, there's a point where my close personal pal, Sean Hannity, was kept saying to Shepard Smith, who's in the field, and talking about a very desperate situation in which the government appears to have failed. And Hannity was saying, well, let's bring some perspective to this, trying to wrestle the conversation back toward not being critical of government response, it appeared. Yeah. And Shepard Smith says, I am giving you perspective. I'm here, and this is what I'm seeing, and that's all perspective you need. I mean, I assume Roger Ailes, the boss over there, you know, made some phone calls over the last weekend and straightened people out. But
yeah, I think they've got it lined up. Now, by the way, my producer, Andrew Boyle, just called up the Barbara Bush quote since we've referred to it, so we know, you know, to be fair to her.
Yeah.
And her exact quote, and I'll read it to you, is goes like this. What I'm hearing, which is sort of scary, is they all want to stay in Texas. Everyone is so overwhelmed by the hospitality. Then she goes on to say, and so many of the people in the arena here, you know, were underprivileged anyway. So this is working very well for them. That's her exact precise quote as recorded.
Well, I'm glad you read it out. And I think it's important for people to understand just exactly what was said.
Yeah. Now, let's, David Brancaccio, we've only got about 8 or 9 minutes left. We have a few people eager to talk with you. I want to get back to the phone lines. Let me remind our listeners, our guest today, David Brancaccio, the host of PBS's Now, which airs nationally on public broadcasting here on WILL every Friday night. This Friday from 7:30 to 8:30, a special one-hour town meeting version hosted by David Brancaccio from Baton Rouge, talking about Hurricane Katrina. Let's go back to the phone lines now. Line 3, Champaign, thank you for your patience. You're on the air with David Brancaccio.
Yes, thank you. I had lots of things I wanted to say, but the time's running out, so I'll only put two questions. First of all of the political favors that were paid back by putting people in positions who had no experience in Homeland Security and FEMA, is anybody going to do a good story on that on PBS? And the other thing, since this is 9/11, is there ever going to be a real commission on the 9/11 and what really happened there instead of the politically insider one that was put together and came out with the 9/11 commission report? And people like Mr. David Griffin, I think that is his name, who put out a book about the omissions and distortions. Is there ever going to be a real revisiting of that issue? I'll hang up and listen. And thank you again, both of you, for the wonderful job you do. You're both my heroes.
Thank you very much.
Oh, my God.
Hey, we're going to have to be a tag team, David.
She was, and I'm not sure I'm quite worthy of that. You know, whether or not, there's so many unanswered questions about 9/11, and whether or not there'll be even more rigorous official assessments, I don't know. I mean, it's going to be like the Kennedy assassination, where, remember, they reopened the Warren Commission investigation about 25 years later and looked at some stuff. I don't know.
I mean, the problem with the 9/11 thing, as I see it, I mean, from is that as long as there are unanswered questions, it feeds all sorts of speculation and conspiracy theory. And until there's study of it and examination, there's no grounds for people not to go off half-cocked if there's stuff that hasn't been looked at.
No, exactly. And then you do a Google search on the web of some of the stuff, and you do see loads of poppycock about 9/11. But there are still really legitimate questions.
Absolutely.
that have to be asked.
You know, I was struck. I just recently read a book called Bad News by Tom Fenton, who's the longtime CBS foreign correspondent and no liberal by any stretch of the imagination. And he has a long discussion of the 9/11 Commission and just all the fundamental issues it didn't cover that were just sitting there that any quality journalist would be looking at that just were glossed over in the report. And it's pretty frightening. I had no idea, frankly, until I read the book.
I'll have to. I've seen Fenton's book, but I have to read it. Now, her first question was about
FEMA.
Oh, yeah. About and
the
about
crony appointments to FEMA.
And you know, amateur. you know, we admire when the Olympics come around every few years. We admire amateurism in sports. That's what the Olympic movement originally was founded on. Moving away from that now, but I'm not sure we admire amateurism in emergency management. And look, we have this American system which relies so much on political patronage and paying back buddies who may have helped to get elected. It doesn't have to be that way. I mean, there are many parts of the British parliamentary system that I would not like to adopt. They have a more uneasy relationship with civil liberties than we do, for instance. We'd want to import the British system lock, stock, and barrel. But I'll tell you what, when a new government comes to power over there, a new guy wins, a new party wins, is actually how it works, only about 100 people change in the whole government. 100 people. The rest are professionals, civil servants, who presumably have some experience in the areas that they that they're responsible for. And if they're not, you know, they get fired as part of the normal job review process. The fact that so many people in the chain of command at a place like FEMA could be people who don't have that kind of expertise is a real is surprising. But you know, if you're not about to say it, I'll say it first, which is that's a better story to have done 2 years ago. In other words, a good journalist like me should have figured that out and done that story. It's a shame that we're just waking up to the fact, hey, take a look at FEMA. It's sort of, look at these people who seem to be running it. Look at their resumes. Doesn't look quite as, not what I would have expected. That's exactly the kind of public policy story that people should be doing more routinely. And
David, we've only got about 3 minutes left. I've got a couple callers, and I do want to, let's try to get to them if we can. Line one or Bannon, if you could be quick, we'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, well, I just wanted to make a complaint, and that is that I've programmed the Now onto my VCR, but your very, very first show with Sylvia Chase put me off so much that I almost deprogrammed you. I'm glad to hear you've got Maria Hinojosa coming on board, but that first one where Sylvia Chase emphasized the illegality of the illegal aliens and seemed to be, you know, like put off, her sensibilities were put off by these poor people. I failed to see what was progressive about it. Without being in some sort of context with a review of American transgressions against Latin America, and especially our really destructive economic policies, it was really very misleading. I was really disappointed.
Yeah, that immigration story. I mean, I'm hoping, not to be flip, but I'm hoping that you'll disagree with a decent amount of what we do, because we bite off complicated, important stuff. We don't always get it right. There are some interesting voices in
that. David, could you give, for the sake of listeners who didn't see that program, could you give just a 20-second thumbnail of what he's talking about?
Well, it's been a while that I don't remember that piece as well as I should. But there were it was communities wrestling with the notion of illegal immigration, and if you read the piece wrong, I'm not saying our caller did, but there's a way to read that piece which suggests that, gee whiz, illegal immigrants, look at the pressures they're putting on infrastructure, and look how communities are struggling to cope. What we had hoped to do with that piece, and I think in other ways it was successful, was to put on the table the reality of illegal immigration. And but we're not perfect at these things.
We've only got a few seconds. So let's see if we can get this last caller in. Line two, Champaign County, you're on the air with David Brancaccio.
Appreciate it. Sylvia Chase was also, I thought, very bad on health care reform. And the fact that Tillotson likes Jim Lehrer so much makes me suspicious of it, and the content analysis that of it that's been done in the past, I think it's important to look at again. But what I wanted to follow up on was the point about this crony appointments in FEMA. I think there's a deeper story there, and I hope you're onto it, with the Sun Sentinel getting all this Freedom of Information emails from the Bush campaign in the election cycle. These people were appointed not as just simply as cronies. They were political operatives. They dumped so much FEMA money into Florida before the election that it had to come out. And that's, I think, one of the real stories, and I hope you're right.
Well, that's a very good
tip.
I'll go back and review their stuff. And for the record, I love Sylvia Chase, but I know that a lot of what we do is extremely controversial on the air.
David Brancaccio, our guest today on Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, producer Andrea Boyle, technical director Brett Polson. David, thank you so much for joining us today, taking an hour out of your weekend to be with us.
No, and I love talking to your callers. They're brilliant, all of them.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you very much. And we'll be back 1 week from today with another guest. In the meantime, remember, Friday night, Now, we'll have the special town meeting on Hurricane Katrina with David Brancaccio, 7:30 p.m. See you next week.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Mike Weaver Ballroom Dance. Private instruction for social or competitive dancing, weddings, or other special events. Lessons for singles or couples, beginners or advanced of all ages. Information at 378-4601 or on your web, search at Mike Weaver Ballroom Dance.
This afternoon in Champaign-Urbana, mostly sunny with a high in the lower 90s and south winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, clear with a low in the mid-60s and south winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with a high in the lower 90s and south winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. This is WILL Urbana, the broadcasting service of the College of Communications at the University of Illinois. 580 on your AM dial and on the internet at will.uiuc.edu. It's 2 p.m. The Tavis Smiley Show is next.